Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is JNYGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's news collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, and Ellie Sturton. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. Council has approved the development of a new special constable appointment strategy aimed at strengthening the city's response to public safety issues and enforcement challenges. Council gave the green light at their June 17th meeting to move forward with a plan that will seat five existing senior bylaw officers appointed as special constables. These officers would be granted limited police powers under select provincial laws, including the Trespass to Property Act, the Liquor License and Control Act, and the Safe Streets Act, to intervene in high-risk situations when police are unable to. A staff report to council cited increasing pressures in areas like encampment enforcement, large unsanctioned gatherings, and disorderly behavior on city property as the rationale for this move. These situations, often labeled high risk, frequently require immediate intervention, something current enforcement staff can't always manage without timely police support. The report emphasized that despite ongoing cooperation from Kingston Police, limited resources often result in consistent delays. Deputy Police Chief Scott Gee addressed council before the vote.
I know there's somebody in this room that knows somebody, or you've called yourself, that police have been delayed getting there, and that's a reality. When I look at our board at some of our peak times, there can be 17 calls sitting there waiting for police to respond to, and those are generally level 3 and 4, priority 3 and 4 calls, but to that person calling, it's a priority 1. Right, they expect police to be present, or law enforcement, or the appropriate agencies to be present. So, I think this gives a little bit of an expansion for bylaw to attend and really attend some of those calls on city property, nuisance calls, noise complaints, unwanted persons, maybe targeting areas such as the downtown core. When I say targeting, I mean putting their resources down here. And it really falls down to the Trespass to Property Act and really expanding their roles for the Trespass to Property Act and how that may look. I think the future could be, this could be a strong position. Most universities and, like I said, most other municipalities like Toronto Housing, OC Transpo, they employ a large cadre of special constables because, obviously the cost of a special constable is lower, and the duties they're doing, a lot of services have tried to use private security companies, and it just hasn't been a success. And if you have your staff that are trained, invested, and stay with you, hopefully you put out a better product than a contract.
Kyle Campo, the city's manager of licensing and enforcement, underscored the need for additional tools for bylaw officers in the field.
It's not that we're going to get into these high-risk situations. We are already in them. We are well over 300 calls for encampments on a reactive high-risk scenario. We're not just focused on encampments. There's other aspects for public spaces that we're looking at where we are currently doing these duties where there are safety risks involved with them. I do feel comfortable with this program that it's going to allow my staff the training, the abilities, to look at other aspects that helps protect them and myself and all of the city in terms of, I guess, the liabilities that we're already doing. It's not that, again, we're going into these high-risk scenarios. We are in these high-risk scenarios as we're speaking. So it does give me a level of comfort that there's regulations that governs this. There's going to be reporting mechanisms, but there's also the advanced training. Again, this is not to come out and be forceful in any aspect. This is to protect ourselves.
While the report and proponents state this is a step towards improving community safety, concerns have been expressed by the community regarding over-policing and the impact this could have on vulnerable populations, including unhoused residents and students. Eldira Balaj and Elisa Parisa, representing the Alma Mater Society, a student association at Queen's University, brought student concerns directly to council.
Students and community members have already expressed concerns about the rising criminalization of poverty, housing insecurity, and public gathering. This model raises concerns about how it may be used to police unhoused individuals and police peaceful protesters. Authorizing senior enforcement officials to exercise police-like powers without the full accountability structures, proactive communication lines, extensive training, and community oversight that apply to sworn police officers creates a dangerous ambiguity to authority and escalation. According to our data, in 2024-2025 school year, there were zero arrests during our UDSI periods like Homecoming, FOCO, St. Patrick's Day, and Orientation Week. Yes, zero. That didn't happen because we had more enforcement. This happened because we practiced proactive collaboration between the AMS, city staff, Queens administration, bylaw officers, police liaison officers. We built trust-based campaigns that worked.
Taking all our concerns into account, we urge council to pause this recommendation, conduct meaningful public consultation with affected communities, including students, advocacy organizations, and equity-deserving groups. And finally, consider reinvesting in harm reduction approaches and civilian-led community safety programs instead of further entrenching enforcement models. As this recommendation stands, this does not seem like a step towards safety. It's a step towards over-policing. This model could potentially show distrust towards your student population, ultimately producing the opposite of the intended effect.
Relaying the concerns from community members, questions from council mainly revolved around oversight and accountability. In response, amendments were introduced by Councillors Brandon Tozzo and Connie Glenn. Tozzo called for a report by the end of 2025 detailing the governance and enforcement framework the special constables will follow. And Glenn added a clause to ensure any expansion of the program will have to come through council again. With these amendments in place, most councillors were ready to cautiously move forward with the program. Councillors Tozzo and Glenn stated the following.
Some of the points that have been risen about this issue in the community, I think, are well taken. We're not, as the chief of police once said, we're not going to police our way out of a mental health and addiction crisis. And we're not. Like, this is a tool, I think, in our toolbox that we do need to look at and take seriously. There have been times I've called bylaw in dealing with challenges in my area, and I know that they would appreciate support for X powers. And I've had constituents who called the police and had to wait out quite a length of time to deal with their issues. The delegation said it best. It's like, even if you're calling the police, it's a priority one to you. If this gives us more tools to deal with some of the challenges that we're facing as a municipality, I support it. But knowing full well that I want to know what we're getting into before this program is launched.
I was tentative about this when it came forward. And I'm still going to remain cautious, but we've put in place, I think, some solid reporting mechanisms, some double checks. One of the things that I wanted to put out there is that I have had contact from a number of members of the community who were concerned about the impact of this on the unhoused and on the encampment community. Now, once they were informed that this would be senior management from bylaw, they were comforted. And I think that this is quite a compliment to our bylaw team that they felt they were capable of doing this and doing this with discretion and with care. So based on that kind of feedback and positive response, I'm heartened to hear that the community is also supportive of this because it's going to be done well. And I trust staff to do that, but I also think we've put the correct mechanisms in place at this point in time. Council has always has the discretion to change their mind on these things, so I'm willing to see this move forward for the time being with the checkback process that it's now being put in place.
Compo also addressed the concern of increased enforcement, stressing that the program will not just be a matter of additional force.
We are always leading by being transparent, working with the community. I appreciate Councillor Glenn's comments in terms of the folks that are reaching out in terms of the encampments, because we really pride ourselves on those relationships that we're building. It's one of the key foundations that, you know, there's a lot of burnout with these types of situations. There's a lot of reoccurring conversations that we have, and we pride ourselves, and that's not going away. We're continuing to build those relationships, not with just members of the vulnerable sector, with the students, with the community in general. That's first and foremost. But I do feel comfort in the fact that we're going to be given the proper tools to be able to deal with these situations that we're already currently dealing with. We're going to be, again, focusing on getting people the proper solutions we need. And then, again, this is only for risk situations that happen when absolutely needed. This is not going out and using any kind of use of force or escalated training or tools in these situations. This is for equipping our staff with the right resources.
Despite reassurance, Councillor Jeff McLaren was the sole vote against the plan, citing concerns about both effectiveness and costs.
One of the things that I learned very quickly coming onto this council was that the Get Tough program is not necessarily the best way to do things. We're on the wrong trajectory when we talk about increasing numbers of police, budgets of police, when we should be talking about what is most beneficial for increasing the trust of those students, of those in the homeless encampments, of people on the streets, in order to get compliance and buy-in. Not just because somebody has a heavy stick or the threat of detainment or extra violence, but because they recognize it as best based on the relationships that people are creating. So I'm going to have to vote against this. It is not sustainable intellectually or from a budget perspective, I believe. Yes, we can handle it this year, maybe even next year, but it's going to become more and more expensive, and I think that money can be better used somewhere else. I believe that it's trust that we need to start developing and finding strategies for, rather than from better enforcement.
The report acknowledged potential financial impacts, including equipment, training, and possible compensation changes, but stated the program will fit within the existing 2025 budget. The motion passed 9-1, McLaren opposed. City staff will now develop a detailed implementation plan outlining training, governance, and reporting requirements. Special constables are expected to be in place by the end of the year. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
This is Jesse Bell with your sports report for Monday, June 23rd, 2025. After a dramatic back-and-forth Game 7 that served as a microcosm of sorts for the broader series, the Oklahoma City Thunder, led by Canadians Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Lou Dort, took home the Larry O'Brien Trophy last night. The Indiana Pacers and the Oklahoma City Thunder had very different journeys to the NBA Finals. The 68-win Thunder were the NBA's top seed and swept their way through their first-round series against the Memphis Grizzlies, won a hard 7-game series against the Denver Nuggets, before cruising to a 5-game victory over the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Pacers, on the other hand, became renowned for their last-second playoff comebacks, led by their superstar point guard Tyrese Haliburton. The matchup between superstar point guards was one with a great deal of stylistic differences. Tyrese Haliburton is an excellent half-court operator who plays very team-friendly basketball, whereas Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is better as an isolation scorer. In terms of team philosophies, Indiana is a great offensive unit, whereas Oklahoma City is one of the best team defensive units in NBA history. This was a thrilling series from start to finish, but unfortunately, Game 7 will be forever left in the what-if category. Because early in the first quarter, superstar point guard Tyrese Haliburton suffered a pretty serious Achilles injury, not only knocking him out of the game, but possibly putting his 2026 season in jeopardy. The Oklahoma City Thunder were able to capitalize on this injury to take home the second NBA title in franchise history and the first in Oklahoma City by a score of 103-91, with Hamilton's own Shai Gilgeous-Alexander taking home Finals MVP. This is the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Beginning with Monday, June 23rd, we're going to see a daytime high of 26, but it'll feel closer to 32. As such, a heat warning has been put in place for Kingston and the surrounding area. That will continue into Tuesday, June 24th, daytime high of 29, feeling closer to 35 out in the sun. So take your time, take it easy, and stay cool. Wednesday, June 25th, it cools off ever so slightly, daytime high of 26 with cloudy conditions. And moving into Thursday, June 26th, we have a daytime high of 23, but a 60% chance of precipitation, which is expected to cool conditions slightly here in the city of Kingston. That rain will give way to thunderstorms on Friday, June 27th. Same daytime high of 23 degrees, but a 70% chance of precipitation and thunderstorms into the afternoon. We're going to see a potential for thunderstorms on Saturday, June 28th. Same daytime high of 23 and about a 60% chance of storms throughout the day. Moving towards the end of the weekend, Sunday, June 29th, conditions warm up slightly, going back to 25 degrees, and we're going to see a lot of cloud cover here in the city of Kingston. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, June 30th, daytime high of 24 degrees with a 70% chance of precipitation. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. The LaSalle Causeway's summer and fall closure schedule has been updated by Public Services and Procurement Canada. Reminder that the summer dates of the LaSalle Causeway's closure are as follows: July 1st, 6th, 13th, 20th, and 27th, August 3rd, 10th, 17th, 24th and 31st, and September 7th, the causeway will be closed from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. on each of those summer dates. As for the fall, the current dates are September 21st, October 5th, 14th, and 19th, and November 2nd and 16th, the time of closure being 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. on each of those dates. Here are this week's relevant road closures. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Aberdeen Street, William to Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen is closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. And Victoria Street, Princess to North Bartlett is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Here are some ongoing delays to be aware of. Abbeydon Road, middle to Highway 2, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Bayridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure and intersection upgrades. Collins Bay Road, Woodbine to Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes landscaping work on Collins Bay Road. Florida Road, Henderson to Wilton, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle, expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users and to accommodate increased traffic from the Wabin Crossing. Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction for sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Now coming up are the main events happening around town this week. On Wednesday, the Ground Up Dance Festival kicks off at Lake Ontario Park. Running until July 12th, it features free performances, classes, and pop-up dance happenings around town. It's all ages and all styles. Or from 7 to 8:30 p.m., join the Fiercely OK Weekly Song Circle at Chalmers United Church. Led by Steph Druin and Paul Barton, it's a welcoming $20 drop-in for anyone who wants to sing in harmony and build community through music. No experience needed. On Thursday, the Spare Some Hope Bowl-a-thon is at Splitsville, Kingston. Sessions run from 4 to 6 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. with bowling, snacks, raffles, and prizes to support food and housing programs through Lionhearts Inc. Tickets are $30 or $170 for a team of six. Also Thursday, Art Noise hosts Life Drawing from 6 to 8 p.m. with a nude male model. Doors open at 5:30 and it's a $10 drop-in open to all levels. Later, check out No Effing Rules, What's Your Talent? At La Vida Bistro Bar. Hosted by local comic Ryan James, this open mic meets talent show starts at 7 with doors at 6. Or if you're in the mood to sing, karaoke at Tiernan Og runs from 9 to midnight and it's always free and fun. On Friday, Buckle Karaoke kicks off at 9 p.m. and goes until 12:30 a.m. It's free to join and always a good time. Over at the Grad Club, the Ottawa Invasion hits the stage from 8 to 11:30 p.m. with drag stars Josephine J and MX Caligula. It's a 19-plus event full of drama, camp, and fierce performances. Tickets start at $11.98. Feeling groovy? The Pride Glide Roller Disco is on at the Memorial Center from 7 to 9 p.m. Hosted by Quad Squad and DJ Tiger Styles and photographer Liz Cooper. It's $22.63 and skate rentals are available if you book ahead. Or head to the Yoga Loft YGK for a sound immersion experience with Mihaela Sanchu from 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. Tickets are $25 for this relaxing meditative session of healing sound. On Saturday, don't miss the Island Talk speaker series at Hotel Wolf Island. From 11 a.m. to noon, journalist John Loring will speak on his new book, No Jews Live Here, exploring how fascism grows in communities. It's a free event on the waterfront patio with a signing to follow. And wrapping things up on Sunday, stroll through the AWEC Summer Pop-Up Market from 10:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. in Confederation Park. This vibrant outdoor event showcases women-led businesses with art, fashion, food, and more. It's free, festive, and open to everyone. Have a local event you would like covered on CFRC's website and our news programming? Contact us today via cfrc.ca. Hey folks, I'm Ellie Sturton, and coming up are your concerts for the week. On Wednesday, Peter Van Huffel's avant-garde quartet, Callisto, hits the RCHA from 7 to 10 p.m. Tickets are $15 at the door. Euphoria, a queer drag celebration, takes over the Grad Club at 8 p.m. with hosts Sherry Ann Hex and Blow Pony. Cover for that one is $15. Or, in Springer Market Square, enjoy free big band classics at 7 p.m. with the Taylor Donaldson Orchestra for the launch of Swingin' Summer. On Thursday, jazz trio Beats Workin' returns to the RCHA from 7 to 10 p.m. Cover is just $5. Or at the Cove Inn, catch Brock Zeman from 5 to 8 p.m. for a Roots Rock birthday show. Entry is by donation. And at the Toucan, Michelle Owen and the Works bring the Pop Rock Party from 10:30 to 2 a.m. On Friday, KPP Concerts presents Housewife Luella and Jessica Wolowicz at the Broom Factory at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $15. At the Mansion, catch Burning Tree, the Healy Brothers, and Why Go from 8 to midnight for alt-rock, blues, and pop. Tickets are $15 at the door. Amber Humbley performs at the Opinicon from 6 to 9 p.m. as part of their free summer series. And over at the Toucan, Monic, Neon Ghost House, Echoes, and Yes Please, and the No Thank Yous take the stage from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Also on Friday, at Base 31, Ella Be Good, a tribute to the First Lady of Song, starts at 7:30 p.m. with tickets from $39 to $59. The Spire is hosting Pretzel Logic, a Steely Dan tribute, also at 7:30 p.m., and tickets are $55.25. Outdoors in Springer Market Square, Abby Stewart performs from 7 to 8 p.m. as part of Kickin' It Country, with free line dancing beforehand. And at Tiernan Og, Tyler Brett Forks plays folk country from 9 p.m. to midnight. It's 19-plus and free. On Saturday, celebrate 12 years of the Big Fat Horn Band at the RCHA from 8 to 11 p.m. with guest Jasmine Wobodich. Tickets are $30 at the door. From 11:30 to 3:30, enjoy Saturday sessions in Confederation Park with free live sets across the genres. Or folks can catch Emma Worley and Claire Hunter at Hotel Wolf Island from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. for a free evening of folk pop. Over at McKinnon Brothers Brewery, Brass Over Tea Kettle plays from 1 to 4 p.m. with bold brass and cold beer. And if you're in the mood for a festival, day one of the Power of Positivity Musical Harvest kicks off at Line Spike Frontenac from 12 to 11 p.m. with Walks of the Earth, Chantal Kreviazik, and more. Tickets range from $99 to $400. And for the Night Owls, Sweet Pea and the Heat bring rock and blues to the Toucan from 10:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. Finally, on Sunday, head to Finkel's Shore Park for live music Sundays with Lucanus Pell at 2 p.m., Ethan Crosby at 3, and Courtney Kane at 4 p.m. And day two of the Power of Positivity Festival features Cassador, Grievous Angels, Tom Green, Kelsey Mayne, and the headliner, Burton Cummings, running from noon to 11 p.m. And at the Toucan, don't miss the Gertrudes from 5 to 8 p.m. for their signature Kingston sound. Have a local concert that you would like covered on CFRC's website and our news programming? Contact us today via CFRC.ca.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.